You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Aye, sir.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek: The Next Generation. Tonight's episode is Loud as a Whisper. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And I'm James from London.
And the synopsis for tonight's show is, the Enterprise brings a deaf negotiator to mediate the end of a planetary civil war. This is the fifth episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. Its original release air date was January 9th, 1989. It was written by Jacqueline Zambrano and directed by Larry Shaw. Guest stars for tonight's episode, special appearance by Diana Muldaur as Dr. Pulaski, Marnie Mosman as Rivas Corus, the girly one, Thomas Oldsby as one of the male Rivas Corus. Leo Damian as the other male Rivas Corus, and Howie Seago as Riva himself. Co-starring, Carl Meany as a transporter chief, Richard Larvin as Warrior Number 1, Chip Heller as Warrior Number 2, and John Garrett as Lieutenant. Yes, because he's the only lieutenant on board that ship. So what do we think of this one? It is okay. It's a pretty good one. I think Deanna really shines through on this one today. I do bag a lot about Deanna, but I think she really came through with this one. What about you, James?
Actually, this is, I mean, in common with a lot of early Next Generation, and I think it's probably going to be specifically as well with a lot of Season 2 Next Generation, which is probably my least favorite series. When I watched this critically, I actually thought it was better than I remember. And that's a weird thing to say. But overall, I actually thought it was a very good attempt. I don't think they managed to hit everything out of the park. And I think they come back with, I think, probably a relatively average episode. But I do respect what they were going for and kind of the scope of the storytelling that they were attempting.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, before we go into the forums and into the episode, I want to ask a question. James, do you ever, when you watch Star Trek, do you ever notice the warp engine sound in the background of everywhere on there? I mean, every room you go to, everywhere on the ship, you hear the hum of the engines. Am I right?
Yeah, there's certainly a hum of the, there's certainly like a background hum. I mean, the warp engine is the zoom, 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 but you certainly do have a hum around, yes.
Okay, question to you is, do you find that annoying when you're watching Star Trek?
No, and I would imagine it, I mean, I've probably been conditioned so that it would be weird to watch Star Trek without the background noise.
Okay.
I don't know.
Reason why I say is I found that background noise, and I want to conduct a test here today. I want to run the engine or the background hum of the ship under our audio for 10 minutes. That's it, just 10 minutes. As soon as when I say go, I'll put it in post. But I want to run it for 10 minutes. I'm curious if anybody, if it, I mean, obviously, you can handle it for 10 minutes, and then I'll stop because I don't want to destroy the whole show. So if I have to destroy any part of the show, I'll destroy your minds for 10 minutes. But I want to know what you guys think about it. Does it at all add to the aura of our podcast, or does it really make it bad? So I'm going to go ahead and start it now, and in 10 minutes, I'll just turn it off and let it go. Okay, so let's go into the forum. And we left off with Episode 1 of Season 2, The Child. Okay, here we go. The Doctor starts this one off by saying, "It's good to be back, and special thanks to Data for popping by for our season opener." Yes, Data. He's pretty smart, isn't he?
Yeah. Are you going to say he makes us go?
He makes us go. Okay.
Okay, and then it's Kieran McDuff. He said, "Glad to have you back. I think my favorite part of this episode is the very start. As you mentioned, the quick coverage of all the changes is really well done to showcase them, but not to focus too long on them. But you did bring up one thought. Like James, I like to rationalize the changes in-universe. Worf putting on a gold uniform, well, he took over from Tasha Yar and now it's been made permanent. Riker's beard, well, maybe he was bored and fancied a change. Geordi becoming chief engineer, I never have worked this one out."
Oh no.
What's wrong with that?
Exactly. I mean, it just seemed... Was it you last week that said you didn't quite get into the whole... Who was it that said they didn't quite get into the Geordi and engineering thing?
No, I like Geordi and engineering.
Was it Paul then?
I think Paul was a bit of a Geordi hater.
That's what I'm thinking of. Guys, I love Geordi. I always have. But anyway, go on.
Don't get me wrong, I think it improves his character no end. It gives him more of a purpose, and it clears a space for Wesley on the bridge more often too. By the way, I'm not entirely sure that's a good thing.
Yeah.
However, in universe, I can never quite rationalize why you would promote the helmsman to being the chief engineer. It's not like the Enterprise was exactly short of engineers. Actually, maybe that's the point. The Enterprise went through so many chief engineers in Season 1 that it's possible Picard decided now was a good time to try thinking outside of the box. Maybe between seasons, he asked for a volunteer to try an experiment, and Geordi was the first to put his hand up. As for the rest of the story, I think it's pretty solid. Obviously, we know it's a rewrite of a Star Trek Phase 2 concept, but it translates well into the Next Generation. Actually, let me just pause and pick up on the fact that, I mean, it does work well, but I think one of the reasons it works well is that, the Riker character and the Troi character in particular are indeed, I'm not going to say lifted from Phase 2, but are at least, they are characters that would have flown, that have been developed from the Ilia and the Decker character from, the motion picture stroke Phase 2. Oh. So I think that's why it works as well. It's also a good way to introduce the new Doctor without focusing too much on her. This is very much Troi's story and not Pulaski's. The fact that Pulaski is involved in the other plot helps as well. So she gets to be in the story quite a bit without being the main point of the story. Very well done. The Pulaski-Data relationship is one that annoys a lot of people, but I never really had a problem with it. It starts off from a very ignorant standpoint, but over the coming episodes, I think it develops very well. I know there's the Spock-McCoy comparison, but I never saw it in the same way as that. Spock and McCoy were quite adversarial and seen as equals, but I always saw Data and Pulaski as being more of a mother and a son relationship. Once Pulaski learns to treat Data the same as everyone else, she practically takes him under her wing at times. All the while still learning herself. I think she actually acknowledges her own prejudices, which is quite refreshing and very good Trek. I think the most contentious aspect of this episode is the bedroom invasion. Trying to defend that something isn't rape would make me feel quite uncomfortable, as it is a very delicate subject in today's society, and I've seen far too much evidence of people doing just that for some ridiculous excuses. I think the only way you can defend this instance is by pointing out that rape is usually related to the sexual act being the goal, and in this case the goal was clearly the pregnancy. However, for me, it comes down to whether or not there was any physical or mental trauma on Troi's side, and I would have to say that there was mental trauma by how she was acting immediately after it. Therefore, for me, this was rape. The fact that it was a complete unknown and their curiosity got the better of them makes for an interesting debate, and one you mentioned about the whole abortion side of things in Trek. They did seem to sweep it under Sorry, I'll do that again. They did seem to sweep that one aside very quickly. Whether that's because they didn't want to touch on it with a barge pole or simply because it would have ruined the plot, I do not know. Ultimately, it's a very interesting way for a life form to learn about another species. It's certainly something I would have liked Star Trek to revisit at some point, but sadly they never do. It's made pretty clear that the life form never intended to harm. I'll assume that includes Troy's bedroom invasion. But it would have been nice to revisit and find out what that life form had learned. Still, this was a terrific start to the second season, clearly one of the better episodes, and a clear step in the right direction after the disappointments in season one. Of course, it won't always be like that. A solid story, obvious dangers from sensible reasons, and some very good talking points to take from it. As such, it's a full 5 out of 5 from me.
You know, I wonder something. What if we talk about how the alien entered her body, what if a passing ship or something just beamed it into her body? Is it still rape? I mean, we don't even know how it entered her. Could it enter through her leg? And so not the usual ways. And yes, obviously it made her a little uncomfortable because she went to bed completely single and woke up completely pregnant. I suppose that in that there is emotionally disturbing, but I mean, I don't know. The whole rape thing. I suppose it's to say, if I was to say something like, that belittles what people go through when they're actually physically attacked. That is rape. If it's just a light ball that just ended up inside you without you ever knowing about it, I'm not so sure that is, but that's okay. Like he says, it'd make a great debate. And one other thing, before we go on, that's the last one about Pulaski in our comments. So I am currently trying, and I'm hoping to get it done before the end of the season. I am currently trying to find if there's any contact information from Diana Muldaur, if she would at all be willing to come on to the show and talk about her time as Pulaski, because I don't even know if she does the convention circuits or if she's doing any other work or what. I can't even find her contact information at this time, because the questions I want to ask her is, what was the director's choices for her role and her interactions with Data? I mean, did she read it as, I'm going to be a bitch to Data this season or in this episode? Or did they say, hey, ham it up, play it up, try to be Dr. McCoy as best you can, jab it on Spock, play it like that? I'm curious what the direction was and how she interpreted her interactions with Data. So,
Lou, I'm not sure if you're aware, but there on the second season Blu-ray set, there is a relatively recent interview with Diana Muldaur, which might be worth digging out. I did watch it. I don't recall if there are any like answers to those questions she had, but I know that she has been interviewed recently in the Trek universe.
Yes, but you know, you gotta know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody, and I was also thinking about getting hold of Natalia Nagulich, who is Admiral Nechayev in TNG. And I was also thinking about whether Natalia would actually like to come on on an episode that she was on and do our review with us. But she seems to know a lot of people, and she is fairly accessible. So I think I'll reach out to Natalia. I don't think Tim Russ would be any good. I got his information. But I'm thinking maybe I'll reach out to Natalia and see if she could put me in touch with her, because I really want to know what was the direction for Pulaski. Because I got a feeling really deep down inside that it was the writers and with the way they told her she needed to do this role that made the fans just hate her. So anyway, Data Logan goes on to say, while I did harp on it a bit during this episode recording, I've had days of reflection and growth. Days of growth. Anyway, I now think Star Trek doesn't shy away from premarital sex much at all, at least not much more than you would expect. And while it is true there aren't very many pregnancies outside of wedlock in Trek, I really shouldn't be complaining about that. It is a good vision of a good future, after all. And it is laudable for most kids to be raised by loving, marrying parents. So, of course, Star Trek will show that most of the time. And then I'll just end this with, you know, not one thing about Wonder Pets. I mean, where else are you going to find in any other Star Trek podcast are you going to find an introduction to the Wonder Pets? Nobody said a thing about the Wonder Pets. Did you even hear it, Doc?
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Anyway, okay, so that is that. So let's go ahead and go on to Loud as a Whisper. So, our nuts and bolts is the ship is picking up a guest who will mediate a dispute between two factions on a planet. The mediator, Reva, has been very successful at his role as mediator for many different worlds. But the only thing is, we don't know how. No one is really aware of how he does his work or who he has on his team. Looked like Worf was about to come out of his skin over Reva.
Yes, and a weird thing about that, right, is that Troy calls him out on that in front of his boss. And I know that I have a tendency to kind of translate Star Trek into modern day life, but it's like if you're going on if you're going to a conference or something with your boss, and then one of your work colleagues turns around and says, "Whoa, you're like really, really scared. I mean, what's wrong with you?" and embarrasses you in front of your boss, it doesn't quite feel right. So I don't know. I know that there are other things involved, and obviously Worf needs to be on top form as the security chief, but I thought it was a little bit weird that Troy was calling him out in front of Riker.
Right. I've never seen you like this, except for when you're expecting battle. I am not expecting battle. Bull! And then what's Riker do? What is your problem? I mean, it's not her. She's right. I believe her. What is your problem? Reva. Yes, okay. There is no word, Klingon word for peacemaker. Well, Worf, a couple things is, that was two words, peace and maker. Isn't it? Two words? Or is it one word?
You could possibly have it in there as one word. I mean, also, we're talking about it in Klingon, right?
Right, that's true. Peacemaker. But really, there is no word for peace, I would assume. It might be death.
Okay. Maybe peace is just not war or something.
Ah, yeah, anti-war. Ah, there would be no reason for anti-war. Okay. So, Picard, Troy, and Worf beam down to Reva's home or social hall, I'm not sure. But they are greeted by Reva and three other people who call themselves his chorus. And as it turns out, Reva is a deaf mute who needs his chorus to convey his thoughts in words. Go ahead.
So now, at this point, I have to say, I think this is a fantastic concept.
Yes.
I really do. I think the concept on this episode is great because you're able to, you've got a great idea, which is that, you have someone with a disability. He is able to use things and he's found ways of using things in different ways. And they go through it a little bit later on, but it's the way that he expresses himself through his chorus that actually really makes him very good at the job that he's doing. And it actually helps him because he has different facets that can communicate with different people and they get reactions in different ways. And by the way, just to put out there, of course, is that the actor that plays Reva is himself is deaf as well.
Yes, yes.
So it's not that you've got a non-deaf person playing a deaf person or anything. It is, I think this is good high concept stuff from Trek, going in the right direction with the storytelling. And I think that the idea of the chorus is a really interesting idea because inside everyone, right, you have different, facets of your personality and maybe if you were to have someone speak for you, you would have multiple people speak for different sides. So at this point, I really like what they're attempting to do.
Well, yeah, but let me ask you this: it seemed like the chorus was always behind Reva, right?
Yeah, typically.
So also, it seemed like Reva was reacting in his face to what his chorus was saying. Like, you know, when she would, they would raise a point, he would also kind of like we would do with our head as we were talking. It seemed like sometimes he was doing with his head. Maybe I misread that or I'm not seeing that, because I don't know. Looked like it to me, at least.
No, I think you're right. I think that's what...
So, that's a mark of a good actor, if that's the case. Especially one who's deaf. You know, he's not going to know what's being said around him. But for him to be able to react to it, that's pretty cool.
Oh, you mean like logistically on the set and stuff? Yeah, yeah. I hadn't considered that. No, absolutely.
Yes. So, anyway, so... let's see. Before they get started, they, you know, they ask, you know, before we start, is there anything you need? Food, refreshments. Of course, Picard speaks for everybody and says, thank you, no. But just once, you know what I'd like to hear somebody say? I'd like to say, hear Worf say, I'd like a cheeseburger or a steak or I'll take a pizza. Or do you have any iced tea?
Yeah, there's some ensign at the back saying, actually, I could really need some a glass of water, please.
Yeah, the red shirt who doesn't know what's going to happen. He's really, really dry mouthed. So, yeah, I could use a glass of water. Okay. But anyway, that it wasn't there. And almost instantly, Reva starts coming on to Deanna.
Yes, he does. And he goes over to her and he, you know, he goes, oh, you know, you're empathic. Yeah. Yeah. So you can hit, you know my thoughts already. But let me just make them extremely explicit and write them down and maybe even draw a few pictures for you. yes. I thought that was funny. And actually, one thing that, you know, they mentioned in the chorus and they mentioned how, you know, one of them is like the passionate side, one's on the academic side, mm-hmm. and then one of them is kind of like the, you know, the harmonious thing that keeps it all in balance. And as a result, whenever he is talking to Troy, because he, you know, he fancies Troy. It's always the same dude talking, and it's always the, you know, it's always the. I almost imagined that it was like a Barry White kind of guy that would go up to him and said, "Hello, Troy," and, you know, like a really kind of like sexy voice, maybe trying to turn her.
I won't do it this time. Okay, yeah, well, number five here I have, one of the chorus is a scholar. He represents Reva's intellect and speak of matters in judgment. He's the dreamer, the rambler, the one who can't shut up until someone interrupts him. Then some, like they say, the libido. There's one that the libido, the passion, the one of... the anarchy of lust, the romantic, the lover, the warrior, the perfect line that never wavers. Oh, and then there's harmony, wisdom, and balance, the one who binds all of them together. But, and then don't forget Picard. He's the one who speaks to the wrong person. But that's not going to happen again since Reva bites his head off. Speak to me!
Ooh. Actually, can I just mention on that? I think that was a very good thing that they had in the episode because... I do think that I think that without this, you might have got the impression that you could talk to the chorus and you could interact with them, and he was almost like a, you know, some guy controlling people or whatever. But what I think that line in particular emphasizes is that you have to deal with the person you're talking to, and not kind of the artifacts or the way that they communicate. So in the same way that if you speak to Stephen Hawking, you're not going to sit down and look at his monitor, right? You're going to be talking to the person. And I actually thought that that line, when he basically shuts down, slaps down Picard, I really do think that that was important in the way that they're trying to portray this particular disability and how it was necessary for them to acknowledge him as the person and not his chorus, because the chorus are his tool. And I did like that. And by the way, it's only kind of like rewatching X number of times that I picked up on this as being what they're trying to do. And I actually thought it was good writing on that.
Right. Have you ever had a relay call?
No.
Okay. Basically, the TDD for the deaf, when you get a call from somebody who's deaf, they're going through a relay. And basically, essentially, anything you want to say to that person, you just say to that person. So I remember when I was in telemarketing here, Actually, I worked in the mailroom, but once a month we had to go down and take inbound telemarketing calls, which I hated. You would get, once in a while, get a relay call. And so every time, everything you said to that person got typed to that person. So if I was to say, do you want a extra ball with that? They'll type, do you want an extra ball with that? But if you were to say, ask them if they would like an extra ball with that, they would write, ask them if they want an extra ball with that. So I got it as soon as he said that, based on talking to somebody on a relay. You've got to talk to them exactly as you would if you were talking to the real person, and the interpreter was nowhere nearby. So, yeah. I got in trouble for that one time. They pulled me in and said, no, because they do quality assurance recordings, and they said, you know, don't ask them to ask them, just ask them. Okay. But that's that. So Deanna gets Reva all fluttered when she speaks, but we have to be going. You know, there's a planet that really, really wants him to pay a visit. So they beam up to the ship, and Picard very quickly tells everyone exactly how to communicate with Reva. Do you think, how do I say this? When they were on the planet, Picard says there are aspects to Reva which we have not been told. And he heard that. Or maybe his chorus heard that and transmitted that to him, because he then said yes. You know, he answered that question, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So I wonder if he may have heard him on the bridge telling others, you know, treat them as interpreters, speak directly to Reva.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would imagine that all of Picard's staff will probably say, well, I mean, of course, Captain, I mean, we wouldn't be so rude as to address his his chorus. I mean, that's just a faux pas.
Yeah, Wesley's going, oh, geez, you didn't know that? Of course, everyone knows that. Geordi, okay, here we go. I love Geordi in this episode. Now, if this sounds like deja vu from last week, it is. Two men with handicaps who don't look at their disabilities anything but a wonderful part of their existence. I loved it when Geordi puts his hand on Reva's chest before Reva does. I kind of thought that was kind of touching between the two, don't you?
No, and absolutely, and obviously, although this particular story is about disability and how, people that have disabilities can still contribute, and in certain circumstances, even contribute to a greater extent. You obviously have a main character on TNG that does have a disability in the form of Geordi, although, in his working life, I suppose it's less of an issue. But I think it's certainly good to have him being on board. And also, a little bit later, we have the discussion about, Geordi getting eyes with Pulaski. And I think that trying to flag these things up in this episode to make sure that people that are just coming in are aware that, Geordi himself is blind as well.
I wondered why that was even there. For some reason, I felt there was no need for that. It was just like filler that they put in.
I think that it's because this episode would have specifically gone out as being flagged as being the the episode where they discussed this, and I think that non-regular viewers would probably have had questions about, why does Geordi, why does he exist in the way he does? Is there anything that could be saved, or is there anything that could be cured on a technological basis? So I think it was basically exposition for non-regular viewers.
Okay, well, that's jumping a little ahead, so I'm going to go and jump there with you. He just talked about how special he is, so, what has changed? And I was asking that question. See, he said, Reva said, these people have been fighting forever, so what has changed? And now we have Geordi on the bridge saying, I really like who I am, so there's no reason for me to resent either one. So then I thought, well, why is he even in sickbay? What has changed that he's now looking into Pulaski as a possibility? I don't know. Had he said, I'm just here for my usual headache medicine, because he has headaches all the time, then she could have said, well, hey, I can do this for you. I've done it twice. You know what I'm saying? I just didn't understand why he was there. But now what you're saying, somebody who may love Howie himself, want to see him on this episode, won't understand why the guy's wearing the headband. And so they're going to – that actually gives a little exposition as to why. That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, basically, this is revisiting the scene that he had with Crusher in Encounter at Farpoint.
Right.
And I don't see it as being anything other than that. And I don't think it then comes up again, right? Not that I can recall.
I don't think there's ever a I can cure your blindness type thing. I mean, he does obviously get eyes. I don't know if they're not real eyes. They're not his eyes. And that's another thing. If I remember one of the movies, he kind of had some funky looking eyes, like they were really blue. So anyway, let's see. Deanna shows Reva to his quarters, and again, he severely comes on to her and tries to make a dinner date, which she looks forward to. And then, of course, I thought that was funny when she kind of glanced over at the interpreter and says, you know, will he be with us?
No, yes, I mean, and this also follows on from the fact that when they did leave the bridge, so, he, you know, Rivas leaves the bridge with the... one of the passionate guys, and the other two are asked, you know, what are you doing? He said, well, in instances like this, it's better for us to stay out the way. I mean, it's almost as if, you know, he's not going to need any of the academic or the balanced side. He's going to just need lust at this point. And then indeed, yeah. Troy starts asking, you know, is he going to be here? Is he going to watch? And you think, what did you think? Did you think that Troy let him get away with more than you would have expected? Or do you think she's just being wowed by him, legitimately?
I think she's just being nice. Yeah. I think she's just being nice. But then again, I don't know. Actually, kind of like, or do you think she's like enamored by him as well?
I think that... I think Troy wants to pursue this. I suspect that.
Okay, so in the briefing, we got lots and lots of information to tell Reva, but as it turns out, it's all irrelevant. The only thing that matters is it's been at war so long that it's become personal. So the basis of peace must also be personal. And that's pretty much it. That was the whole briefing. Okay, bye.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded like Data had actually spent some significant time and investment getting this ready.
Yeah.
And he basically went, nah, it's all good.
This isn't
like, you know, when we had Admiral Jameson, when he was going back to a place that he knew well. He doesn't know these people. He's not familiar with these people. And he basically sits down and says, you know, all arguments are basically the same. It'll be fine. You know, we'll deal with it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And I think they do that to show that Reva might be a little bit arrogant, and his arrogance is going to kick him in the ass soon, maybe.
No, I think so. I did have down that he did come across as arrogant, and as the way the story goes, right? It's he himself does have to learn in this episode. It's not just a case of this show coming on that, hey, we've got a deaf person and he's a super person and he does something great and everyone claps. He has to go through a change and he has to confront things himself.
Right. Okay. So Deanna and Reva at dinner. And I wonder I was thinking what if the interpreter was there? You know, would he be standing there while the two of them eat? Would he join in the dinner? Because it would sound a little bit weird for the interpreter to have some steak in his mouth as he was talking to Deanna. So it's interesting that he sends him away and he tries to teach Deanna a little bit of sign language. Speaking of sign language, I'm going to go ahead a little bit. Okay, Data in sign language, or could I say Brent Spiner in sign language? Obviously, Brent was just reading the script. I mean, he was looking at Howie playing Reva, and he was just reading the script as if he was reading Reva's interpretations. But when I watched Data trying to do sign language, I thought it was ridiculous.
Wait, you didn't buy it?
Buy it. It was so absolutely pathetic. I mean, it's at one point. Let me find it here. Let's see here. Because, okay, it says Data learns sign language, and now is his chorus. While Picard is saying what happens was not Reva's fault, Data is trying to do the sign language, but somehow, before Data says what happened was a result of one desperate man, Data already had his finger up to describe that one desperate man. So if you watch it before Picard says anything, it was the act of one desperate man, Data's already got his one finger up. So I thought, well, maybe Data is empathic as well, but... And then he's doing a little itsy-bitsy spider with his fingers. And I thought, oh, this is so stupid.
Okay, I think, I mean, Lou, you're more cynical than I am on this particular case. I have to say, I mean, as a like, as a Data fan, you know, I love whenever they have Data superhuman abilities. And I, you know, as a kid watching this, I liked the way that he was just scrolling through, you know, thousands of lines of text or thousands of pages of text and learning everything. And he was able to learn, you know, five different varieties of it. And I kind of, well, you know, I went into this with my eyes, you know, with, well, I went into this thinking, hey, isn't it great that he can do all of this great stuff? I didn't catch him out on the, you know, on the slips on the sign.
Okay. Okay. So anyway, Reva comes to the bridge and talks with the two factions, and the laser activity stops instantly. Reva finds the best spot to transport to, and arrogantly leaves the ship with very few people to meet the people who have been killing each other. And you know what they say? One rotten apple kills the chorus.
Do they say that really? I mean, but by the way, I think Rivas at this point comes across as being extremely competent and very good at his job. And I know that you're going to say, well, he got his chorus killed. I accept that. But I think that the way that he describes the fact that he has to go down in a certain way, you can't go down with lots of people. You do have to try to build trust. He does mention that the first moments are going to be very, very tense. He does kind of preempt how people will react. And I do think that I think he's in the right. I read the reason why they got killed, by the way, is that, you know, Worf is around and he does kind of, you know, hold down on his face a little bit. And he doesn't necessarily provoke anyone, but he does make a situation a little bit more tense. But I actually thought that, you know, I thought that the stuff that they were describing that a peacekeeper or a negotiator would need to do, I thought was actually quite good. And it was certainly better than when we had too short a season with Admiral Jameson. I thought Reavers came across as a much more likely peacekeeper, frankly.
Yes. Well, I agree with that. Yeah.
And did you notice that it was, I think it was the second time in 2 weeks where we had people talking about lasers.
Yes.
And how they're no threat, I think, as well.
Yes, they're no threat. But of course, one laser shot took out all three of the chorus. So, okay. So now Reva is cursing at himself in sign language about how stupid he was. And now comes a task of communicating with him. So Picard gets Data to learn sign language. And what do you think about the moment where Picard grabs his face and says, you know, listen to me? Wait a minute. Did he just say, listen to me? Ah, no pun intended. Listen to me. You are not alone. We are all in this together. What do you think of that?
I mean, to be honest, I thought he kind of overstepped the mark a little bit, to be honest. I don't think that, you know, I mean, he's going in for proper full physical contact of someone and holding their head. And I mean, I think you have to be careful that, someone who looks younger and stronger than Picard doesn't just knock him to the floor.
maybe. Or maybe Deanna stopped him from killing him, empathically. Wait, nope, he doesn't mean that. Just give him a chance. So, Dr. Pulaski can't do anything for him. His brain is incapable of receiving auditory sounds that his ears receive. So, did you get the impression this is a condition that only Reva has? Or is it something that his species has?
No, I think it's mentioned that it was not his species, but a sub group of his species. I think it was like the upper echelons or the ruling families of his species had it. So I think it's certainly genetic. I don't think everyone in his species has it, but it's certainly been within his family because he mentions that the chorus structure has been around for centuries and they've become very adapted to it. Picking up on everything.
Right, because I passed over that. I'd glazed over that. Yeah, he says his ancestors, the chorus's ancestors, were chorus to his ancestor. That sounds right. Does it? Oh, man.
Yeah, I think so. I think at the beginning, and it's the technique that they have happened to have been developed. And I got the impression that it was a group or a family of these people and then a family of the choruses or at least a social strata, maybe not even necessarily a family, but they had developed this kind of intertwined relationship. Right. So I don't think he was, his species was deaf outright. I think it's more of he's a particular case of one of these species.
Okay. All right. So anyway, now he just wants to go home and forget this whole thing. Deanna, obviously, she's going to guide him back by figuring she was going to mediate the conflict on Solaris. So she talks to Reva about advice on how to turn the disadvantage into an advantage. And while he is trying to get her to pick up on the secrets of being a mediator, she's actually turning the tables on him to make him realize that he could turn his disadvantage into an advantage. And that's why I say Deanna did superb on this episode. Don't you agree?
I agree that the outcome is good because I think that's she manages to get him down there. But do you think that was her plan all along or did you just stumble upon that during the conversation? Because I thought that she was going to go down and do the negotiating and she wasn't using this as a bluff.
Oh, no, I thought it was a bluff the whole time.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of figured that she was trying to trick him into going back in for it. I figured there was no way she was going to go down there and try and negotiate this. I don't think she could. You know what I'm saying?
No, I agree with that. If she was using this as a technique of getting Reva's more on track to go down it herself, then... That was very good. I'll have to reconsider this. I thought when I watched, I thought that she was originally going to go down and actually take this on herself because she felt that she was best placed to step in. But then whilst they were having the conversation, he almost allowed her a way into his argument that would effectively call his bluff and push him down there himself. But I suppose whichever way, right, it's still competent work from the counselor. Mm.
So you think maybe he was bluffing that he didn't want to do this any longer?
I think that originally he didn't want to do it any longer, but when he discussed it with Troy as to why and everything, I think that at that point she was able to argue him into the case.
Oh, okay.
And she basically said, look, you've mentioned in the past that you take a disadvantage and turn it into an advantage. Now, why can't you do that? I thought that basically completely broke down any of his arguments or any of his objections that Rivas would have had at this point.
Oh, see, and that's why I assume that this was all a play on her part. She was building him up to this point, why can't you do that? To make him come to it himself. It's like my daughter. If I want her to do something, it's better for her to guide her to realizing that that's what she wants to do than it is to tell her that's what she has to do. So, I mean, I don't think it's the same, but still, that's kind of what I thought.
No, I can see it. I can certainly see that. I can see it either way. And, you know, maybe it doesn't have to be completely, particularly completely clear. You can read it which way you wish.
Cool. Okay, so Reva realizes what's going on, and they come up with the plan that he's going to teach them sign language. And I thought that was very interesting. If these guys are so diametrically opposed to each other and they just want to kill each other, I have a hard time thinking of them sitting in a chair learning sign language. But on the other hand, it's a neat idea. While they're learning to communicate with Reva, they're going to be learning to communicate with each other. I like the idea. In the end, it wins out.
No, I have to agree. I think the way that the story fell together actually really works very, very, very well. And I was reading on Memory Alpha that this was a last minute change to the end, because I think previously it was going to be the case that Reavis himself would be able to learn to talk and communicate normally, which I think is when you compare it to the ending that they ended up with, it's just horrendously bad. I think, yeah. I think the thing that makes this story work is the way that it ends, in my opinion. And I think it's a perfect ending. And I was surprised to read that apparently wasn't the original ending on the cards.
I think it's interesting because I don't know enough about Howie Seago, if he's also mute or if he could speak or what. He doesn't. I don't even think he so much as grunts in this episode.
No, he doesn't. I don't know either. I would assume that he would be just deaf rather than a mute as well.
Okay. I mean, because you would think he'd be screaming at himself. You could hear audio as he was, I called it cursing at himself, because he was upset about what happened to his course, and I'm surprised if he could speak that he didn't in that point. Okay. So they return to the planet, and this time Riker's taking no chances. None at all. Well, except for one. He takes himself, Worf, Data, and Deanna back to the planet in a show of force. However, he tells everybody to put their phasers on stun. Nice. The last time he had his phaser on stun, the other side vaporized three of his away team with one shot. Why do they do that stun thing?
I mean, I'd make the argument that stun is all you need. I don't know why you need a setting on your phaser which is vaporize. I mean, you have to be very you have to be very good at making sure you hit the right guy, because once you've vaporized someone by accident, there's not really much going back on that.
Right. I just don't. I've heard a lot of talk about the wide beam. How come in some episodes you could take out the entire bridge with one shot, but yet on Deep Space Nine, that big fight scene, the Siege of AR something or another? I mean, they're having to shoot people one at a time after another, and it just, wow, couldn't they just wide beam everybody out at the same time?
The wide beam phase is too powerful. I mean, it should never have been brought in, because once you do have it, you do just say, why did you always use it? just wide beam them all, and then you clear up the mess in the morning.
Exactly. Just like another thing, Picard realizes on the holodeck with the safeties off that a Tommy gun could take out several Borg at the same time. Why not outfit the entire fleet with Tommy guns? Who knows? That would be too expensive, I guess. they didn't have the rights to replicate a Tommy gun. Okay, so the ship leaves the planet, and Reva stays alone, teaching them sign language. And since we never, ever hear from him again, we don't know if he was successful or not. Or do you think he might have gotten vaporized?
I think he might still be there.
Might still be there. Because they forgot about him, so he's actually on that planet forever.
And by the way, being slightly facetious aside, I don't think it matters whether or not he was successful, in my opinion. I think that the story doesn't need, from the point of view of the Reavis character, I don't think the story needs him to have been successful or him to have not been successful for it to reach a natural conclusion. I think it's, you know, from a story's perspective, it's a grown-up attempt at now him going down to sort out the issues. And I think that we can leave it now. And yeah, it would have been nice to know what happened, but then you don't want it to be shoehorned into another plot somewhere else, and you don't want it to be picked up just for the sake of it being, you know, picked up. So I'm happy the way it ends.
I think I already know how it ended. The whole planet got assimilated by the Borg before Woof 359. Good enough. And unfortunately, since Reva was still there, he's now 27 of 35. Okay, so anyway.
Would you be able to keep the beard if you were assimilated by the Borg? Could you keep the beard?
Well, since Annika Hansen kept her breast, I don't see why not. I mean, what, are they going to make him clean, shave?
I don't know. You very rarely see the Borg shave, right?
No, I guess not. I mean, maybe they don't grow hair anymore. Fascinating. I don't know. That's a good point. What would Riker look like as a Borg? Too bad they didn't assimilate Tom. We could find out. And besides, you know how, what's the word I'm looking for? Coincidental it was that Thomas Riker grew that beard just like William did.
Oh, you mean and kept it in the, you know, kept it in the same proportion whilst being stranded on a planet for what was it, 15 years or 10 years or whatever it would have been?
Exactly. Yeah. I think as time went on, he realized that, you know, he'll never see Deanna again, but she might like a beard because she'd never kissed him with a beard on before, which we already know that was false, but...
it's one of these things they do in Star Trek and other series as well. Whenever you have twins, people often assume that twins, or even indeed clones, would look the same. But the fact of the matter is that, environmentally speaking, it wouldn't really be the case a year or two. You know, if you take a clone of yourself and you put him in the Sahara Desert, and you take another clone of yourself and you put him in, you know, another country, you are going to look different from that guy once you've been surrounded in an environment for any significant length of time. So the Riker coming up probably would have weighed 4 or 5 stone less than William T. Riker on the Enterprise, and he would have been disheveled and...
Yeah, right. Thin because there's hardly any food for him or whatever the case may be. Okay, well, do you have any more on this episode?
No, I'm good. I've got to the end.
Okay, well then.
So it's now time to give our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Now, as actually I mentioned at the beginning, I was pleasantly surprised by this episode. I didn't have a lot of memories about how this went, and in particular how well conceived, I suppose is the right word, the story for it was. So I actually left with this being very impressed. I don't think it fires on all cylinders, and in particular it doesn't... Well, perhaps what I should say is that I think that the storyline had the potential to be something like a Darmok. You know, a very, very good story, a very high concept story that they were able to explore and they were able to look into. I don't think it hits those heights. And I think it doesn't hit those heights. I'm not entirely sure why. I think that the relationship between Rivas and Troy was a little bit forced. I thought that Troy was... you know, a little bit too easy, maybe, in this episode. I thought that the general idea of the Rivas character with his chorus was very good, and I really enjoyed the solution at the end and how that fitted all nicely. I thought that the process of getting there was somewhat clunky, and I didn't care at all for the scene with Geordi and Pulaski midway through.
Yeah.
So in my mind, this is coming in somewhere between like a 3 and a 4, and I am feeling generous today, and I don't do half points, and I'm going to knock this one up to a 4. I think it's an above average episode of Trek that really has a good, you know, a good concept at its heart. Yeah. So what are your thoughts, Lou?
Okay. Well, let's see here. Let me put you down for a 4. I thought the guy who plays Reva, Howie Seago, is an excellent character. I'm comfortable with him. Just like his character, he is deaf, and you know, he's a good actor. He has turned his disadvantage into an advantage, and so he does play a lot of good deaf characters and plays them well. The chorus I thought was an interesting idea, and it seemed to be working good. So, since it's working too good, obviously there's a need to kill them off, because then you have to turn your disadvantage into an advantage. The idea of mediating two people that are hell-bent on killing each other by teaching them sign language, I think that's also a very good idea, and it does show promise in the end. Geordi and Reva together, I thought, was terrific. It was a touching moment. I really liked that. Geordi and Pulaski, it was ridiculous. I don't understand. I thought it was just filler, but now what you say makes perfect sense. Reva and Deanna really shined in this episode. Okay. She's the one that really helped Reva overcome this tragedy. So she deserves a lot of high marks in this one. So in the end, I think it was a very good story. It was a pretty good story. And since, like you said, I felt the exact same way. It came in between a 3 and a 4. But I do allow half marks. So I came in at a 3.5. So you've got another 18 weeks to decide if you want to change that 4 to a 3.5. As we do in the end of the season, we go back and reflect everything. And little time sometimes helps us to change some of our marks. So you've got some time before we're done with this season. Okay. Okie dokie.
Okie dokie.
Now, as I mentioned earlier in this podcast, I did have for 10 minutes the buzzing sound of the Enterprise. I will not do that again until I get some feedback on this. So, obviously, this will come out on October 24th. And in that time, well, then again, October 25th, we have our next show. That still won't be enough time. So if I was to hear that everybody loves it and they like the idea of having the hum of the Enterprise behind us, you'll hear that on A Matter of Honor, on which would be coming out on November 14th. So let me know, please, on how you like that. If I just get one thing that says, yeah, okay, I'm not going to do it. I would like to hear some more positive or more negative. Tell me if you want it or not. And we will or will not do it.
Next time on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
There are two disparate personalities within Lieutenant Commander Data.
Data is invaded by the soul of a dead scientist.
I will never have to face death again.
Are you hurting me?
It turns him into an alien Jekyll and Hyde.
Data is dead.
Who's next?
And triggers a violent assault on Star Trek, The Next Generation.
Okay, well, join us next week as we review episode 6 of season 2 of The Next Generation, which is The Schizoid Man. So, thank you very much for joining us. I have been James from London.
And Colin will be on for The Schizoid Man, I should mention, so we will hear from Colin. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
And good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.